that tired statistic, right? That 50% of marriages end in divorce.
Oh, yeah, constantly. It's thrown around all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a reason to just be totally cynical about tying the knot, you know, treating your future like a coin flip.
Right, but when you actually look at the data, that narrative doesn't really hold up anymore.
No, it doesn't. Because according to 2023 data from the CDC, out of over 2 million marriages in the U.S., there were about 672,000 divorces.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you are looking at first marriages, the divorce rate is actually closer to 40%.
40%. I mean, it's a persistent myth, but the landscape of marriage and, you know, separation has shifted.
Totally.
Where the numbers do jump, though, is with subsequent marriages.
Yeah.
So the failure rate hits roughly 60% for second marriages.
Wait, 60?
Yeah, and a staggering 73% for third marriage.
Oh, wow.
So while the coin flip analogy is a bit of an overstatement for first-time newlyweds, a significant portion of relationships do eventually end.
Right. And when they do, dividing a shared life is just incredibly complex. Which brings us to the mission of today's deep dive.
Exactly.
Because when a breakup happens, we kind of instinctively know how the house, the cars, the bank accounts get divided.
Yeah, there's a huge legal apparatus for all that.
Right. But what happens to the furry friends caught in the middle?
That is the big question.
For you listening right now, understanding the highly surprising legal reality of pet custody and this booming new trend of pet nups could genuinely save you thousands of dollars. And a whole lot of heartbreak.
It really is a fascinating intersection of emotion and law, mostly because there's this this profound disconnect between how we view our pets and how the legal system views them.
Yeah, huge disconnect.
Recent research actually shows that 51% of pet owners view their animals not just as companions, but as actual family members.
Right. I mean, people refer to themselves as pet parents. They get their dogs' birthday cakes. They dress them up for Halloween, buy them orthopedic beds. The emotional investment is undeniable.
Oh, absolutely.
But if we view them as kids, how does a judge look at them when a couple splits?
Well, historically, the law has not shared that warm, fuzzy sentiment at all.
No.
No. In the UK, and in the vast majority of US states, pets are legally classified as chattel.
I mean, that sounds entirely medieval.
It does.
It sounds like something out of like a 16th century property dispute.
Well, it is an older legal term. It actually shares an etymological root with the word cattle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that historical context is super important because the law has agrarian roots.
Right.
For centuries, animals were primarily working livestock or, you know, economic assets.
Hmm.
A dog was a tool for hunting or herding. A cat was pest control for the barn.
That is precisely the core of the problem.
Right.
A judge looking at a property dispute wants to achieve what's called equitable distribution. They're basically trying to make a financial spreadsheet balance.
Okay.
So if you buy a $2,000 refrigerator, 5 years later, the court looks at its depreciated fair market value. Maybe it's worth like $500 now.
Right. Depreciating asset.
Exactly. They assign that financial value to one side of the ledger. But you cannot cut a dog in half to share the value.
Definitely not.
And more importantly, the fair market value of an aging dog might be $50. But the emotional value to the owner is infinite.
So the court is forced into this incredibly awkward position of trying to assign property rights to something that the owners view as a child.
If they can't split the dog and they're using property laws, what are they actually looking at to determine who gets to keep the animal?
You'd be surprised.
Are they looking at who walks the dog or, you know, who the dog snuggles with on the couch?
In a strict property analysis.
Okay.
No.
No.
The court looks for receipts.
Receipts. Wow.
They treat it like you were trying to prove ownership of a stolen bicycle.
Oh, my gosh.
Who paid the adoption fee or the breeder whose name is registered on the microchip.
Right.
Whose credit card pays the vet bills and buys the kibble. The pet's emotional attachment to one person over the other is traditionally ignored.
That is incredibly stark.
The law demands a cold, hard paper trail.
I mean, it makes mathematical sense on a ledger, sure, but treating a beloved pet like a piece of depreciating furniture inevitably leads to, like, explosive battles.
Oh, totally.
When you strip away the emotion in the eyes of the law, people just fight even harder to prove ownership.
Yes, they do.
So if the legal system relies on fair market value, what happens when you have couples with practically unlimited resources? Does the legal framework just break down when money is no object?
It doesn't break down. But the pet becomes incredibly vulnerable to weaponization.
Weaponization.
Yeah. In family law, whenever you have an asset that holds high emotional value but low objective financial value, it is routinely used as leverage.
Oh, I see where this is going.
If one partner knows the other is desperate to keep the dog, they might use the animal as a bargaining chip.
Wow.
You know, to get a better deal on the house or the retirement accounts, or sometimes simply to inflict emotional pain.
That is so dark.
And the celebrity sphere really magnifies how contentious this can get. Because while the financial assets are huge, the emotional attachment to the pet is exactly the same as anyone else's.
Which gives us some wild precedents to examine.
Oh, definitely.
If we look at Britney Spears and Sam Asghari, their split perfectly illustrates this clash between financial value and emotional value.
It really does.
Because after their split, Asghari filed for divorce, citing irreconcilable differences. And in the filing, he asked for separate assets and various items.
Right.
This immediately sparked fears that he would try to claim their dogs.
Because legally, those dogs are just another itemized asset on the spreadsheet.
Right.
And the origin of those specific dogs really complicates the property claim.
Yeah, they had Portia, a Doberman that Asghari actually gifted to Britney in 2021 for protection.
Exactly.
And then there was Sawyer, an Australian shepherd that Britney adopted.
Mm.
According to reports, Britney absolutely refused to give those dogs up. She drew a hard line in the sand.
She did.
But she was reportedly more than happy to hand back her engagement ring, which was like a custom 4-carat diamond.
Which is just a brilliant illustration of how traditional equitable distribution fails pet owners.
Yeah.
The diamond ring has immense objective fair market value. The dogs, in the eyes of a property appraiser, have very little.
Right. Maybe a few hundred dollars?
Yet the multimillionaire pop star is essentially telling the court, take the highly valuable geological asset, but you are not touching my dogs.
The emotional value completely eclipses the financial reality.
Totally.
It also comes down to the origin of the property, like you mentioned. And we saw this play out on an international stage with the extremely messy divorce between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard.
Oh, yes. The war on terrier.
Exactly. We're strictly looking at the pet aspect of this legal saga here, but it shows how far people will go to secure the asset.
Right.
Heard kept their Yorkshire Terriers, Pistol and Boo, after the divorce, but getting to that point involved a literal international incident.
You're referring to the situation in Australia.
Yes.
Which highlights the lengths owners will go to maintain physical possession of what the law considers personal property.
Exactly. Heard smuggled those dogs into Australia on a private jet while Depp was filming a movie.
Unbelievable.
She bypassed Australia's incredibly strict quarantine laws, which are designed to prevent rabies.
Right. They take that very seriously.
The Australian Agriculture Minister literally threatened to euthanize the dogs if they weren't removed within 72 hours.
It's just an astonishing risk to take just to keep the animals close.
Ultimately, she kept the dogs in the divorce settlement. Largely because one was gifted to her by a previous partner.
See, there it is again.
It wasn't about who loved the dog more. It was about the legal origin of the gift.
The property framework forces these outcomes. It forces lawyers to argue about gifting laws rather than, you know, animal welfare.
Yeah.
And when these cases are settled out of court, we see contract law being utilized in fascinating, almost punitive ways to ensure compliance.
Okay, that perfectly segues into the case of actor Chantel Van Santen and Victor Webster.
Oh, the Nova case.
Yeah, they had a dog named Nova. In their divorce, they avoided trial but reached an incredibly strict, almost punishing settlement agreement.
Right.
Webster got sole ownership of the dog, but Van Santen gets extended visits. But here is the crucial lethal mechanism.
This is wild.
If Van Santen keeps the dog longer than her allotted 3 weeks, she faces a $10,000 fine for every single day she's late returning the animal.
$10,000 a day.
A day.
That is an extraordinary penalty clause for a pet visitation agreement.
Okay, let's unpack this. When you see a penalty that steep, is it truly about ensuring the dog's routine isn't disrupted? Or is it a contractual mechanism designed to maintain control?
It's almost certainly a mechanism of control.
Like preventing the other person from pulling a fast one with the property.
Exactly. It's born out of the unpredictability of the legal system. When the law treats a living creature as a lamp or a sofa, owners feel compelled to draft these ironclad, punitive contracts to protect themselves. But what is truly concerning is that you absolutely do not have to be an A-list celebrity to find yourself trapped in an absurd, weaponized legal standoff over a pet.
No.
No. The strict application of property law creates bizarre outcomes for everyday people, too.
Which brings us to perhaps the most extreme example of pet custody we found in the research.
Yeah, this one is tough.
This isn't Hollywood. This happened recently in Delaware. And just for context for you listening, this didn't happen in a small claims court.
No, it did not.
This case made it to the elite Delaware Chancery Court. Because so many Fortune 500 companies are incorporated in Delaware, this highly prestigious business court usually handles multi-billion dollar corporate mergers.
Right, or disputes over executive pay packages.
Exactly.
It is a court designed to untangle the most complex corporate financial structures in the world.
And yet, the judge found herself presiding over a three-year legal battle between exes Karen Callahan and Joseph Nelson. The asset in dispute was not a shell corporation. It was a five-year-old golden doodle named Tucker.
It's wild.
How does a judge specializing in corporate law even begin to resolve a dispute over a golden doodle?
By applying the exact same property laws she would use for a corporate asset.
You're kidding.
The judge noted in her ruling that both parties proved they deeply loved the dog. Both were perfectly capable of caring for him. But remember the framework. Pets are property. So the law required the judge to partition the asset.
Partition? What does partitioning actually mean in this context?
Well, in property law, if two people jointly own a tractor and they dissolve their partnership, they can't split the tractor down the middle.
Right.
The court orders the tractor sold and the former partners split the cash value. That is partitioning an indivisible asset.
But you can't sell a dog.
Exactly. Since you cannot just sell a beloved family dog on the open market to a stranger without causing immense emotional distress to the owners, the judge was forced to create a different mechanism.
Okay.
Since both parties had a valid claim to ownership, she ordered a literal private auction.
You mean they actually had to bid on their own dog?
Yes. The two exes were ordered to bid against each other using their own money.
Oh, my goodness.
The highest bidder wins Tucker. The loser gets the cash from the winning bid, theoretically compensating them for the loss of their half of the property.
That is mind-boggling. It is like a hostile corporate buyout, but the asset is a very good boy.
It really is.
But if we look beneath the surface here, doesn't an auction completely ignore the emotional trauma on the dog?
Entirely.
It seems to exist purely to maximize financial value for the humans involved, treating the dog no differently than a vintage car.
It entirely ignores the dog's experience.
Mm.
And that highlights the fundamental flaw in applying archaic property laws to living, feeling creatures.
Yeah.
In the Tucker case, the couple actually brought in a veterinary behaviorist who testified at an evidentiary hearing.
A behaviorist?
Yeah, this expert medical witness testified that Tucker had hyperattachment issues and would experience acute stress if his living situation changed abruptly or if he was separated from his primary bond.
So the court had expert testimony outlining the psychological harm this would cause the animal.
Yes.
And they still auctioned him off.
The law's rigid framework left the judge with very few legal options.
That's heartbreaking.
The judge legally could not base her decision on the dog's anxiety. She even wrote in her decision that she recognized this outcome would cause heartbreak. But legally speaking, an auction was the fairest way to maximize the recovery of financial value for whichever co-owner lost the property.
It's the cold, logical, and ultimately tragic endpoint of treating a pet like a piece of furniture.
Truly tragic.
So if you are listening to this, looking at your dog or cat right now, the obvious question is, how do you prevent your beloved pet from hitting the auction block if your relationship goes south?
Right.
If the courts are tied to these archaic property laws, what is the alternative?
Well, the good news is that the legal landscape is finally, slowly starting to catch up to modern society.
Okay, good.
A few states are waking up to the reality of how we live with companion animals. California recently passed a law, AB 2274, which explicitly differentiates companion animals from other types of marital assets.
Oh, that's a huge step. It's shifting the paradigm away from pure property.
Yes.
And it's not just California doing this route.
Correct. Alaska, Illinois, and a handful of other states have enacted similar statutes. These laws are revolutionary because they allow courts in divorce proceedings to consider the care or the well-being of the animal.
Oh, wow.
Judges are now legally permitted to create shared custody agreements or order temporary care arrangements.
So instead of a corporate partitioning model, it is moving much closer to a child custody model.
Exactly. It gives judges the discretion to look past the adoption receipt. They can examine who actually walks the animal, who provides a safer living environment, and what outcome is in the animal's best interest.
That makes so much more sense.
But, and this is a big caveat for anyone listening, this is still only the law in a very small minority of states.
Right.
In the vast majority of the country, your dog is still legally equivalent to a toaster.
Which is why couples are increasingly realizing they cannot rely on the legal system to protect their animals.
No, they can't.
They have to preempt the law entirely. Because recent research shows that a staggering 84% of pet parents actually support proactively deciding their pet's fate in the event of a breakup.
Yeah, people want certainty.
And about a quarter of co-pet parents already have some form of official agreement in place.
It is a dramatic shift in how couples approach relationship planning.
Yeah.
You know, bringing up a prenuptial agreement used to be seen as anticipating failure. But drafting one for an animal is increasingly viewed as an essential part of responsible pet ownership.
So what does this all mean for you? If I am moving in with my partner next week and I am bringing my dog, what exactly am I supposed to be putting in writing?
Good question.
Let's walk through the mechanics of a pet note. Do I literally need to itemize vet bills?
The very first rule is to draft the agreement early.
Okay.
Do this when you are happy, rational, and a breakup isn't even on the horizon. That is the time to decide what is fair.
That makes sense.
And yes, you absolutely need to outline financial responsibilities. In the legal world, they're actually starting to call this petimony.
Petimony. I love that.
You need to stipulate who pays for the daily food, the routine grooming, and crucially, what happens if there is a catastrophic $5,000 emergency vet bill?
Oh, yeah.
Are you splitting that 50-50, or is the primary owner responsible?
That makes perfect sense financially, but what about the logistics of shared custody?
Right.
Because life changes pretty rapidly after a split. What happens if we agree to a two-week-on, two-week-off schedule, but then one partner gets a job offer across the country?
That is exactly why you need to build in contingency clauses.
Okay.
Specifically, relocation triggers. The agreement should dictate how a move impacts the custody arrangement.
Like, do they lose their time with the pet?
Right. Does the person moving forfeit their custody time? Or do they get the pet for 3 months out of the year? You have to plan for the unexpected.
I've also heard about couples including a right of first refusal clause. How does that work logically in a pet agreement?
Oh, it is a brilliant inclusion. Let's say one person is designated as the primary owner in the pet now. A right of first refusal means that if, years down the line, that primary owner can no longer care for the pet.
Like they get sick or something.
Exactly. Maybe they develop a severe illness or they are forced to move into an apartment building that absolutely bans dogs.
Okay.
They cannot just rehome the animal with a stranger or surrender it to a shelter. They are legally obligated to offer the pet back to their ex-partner first.
I know that sitting down at the kitchen table to discuss a prenup for a puppy might feel incredibly unromantic.
It does, yeah.
It can feel like you are betting against your own relationship before it even gets off the ground. But if we really look at what we've discussed today, it is the ultimate act of love.
Truly.
You are ensuring that no matter what happens between the two of you, the dog is protected from future chaos. You are guaranteeing they won't be weaponized as an emotional chess piece or end up being auctioned off to the highest bidder in a Delaware courtroom.
It's all about removing the uncertainty and taking control away from an outdated legal system.
Yeah.
If we synthesize everything we've explored today, pets are overwhelmingly recognized as family in our hearts and in our homes. But the law is lagging decades behind.
Decades.
Treating a breakup practically with a legally sound pet nup ensures the animal doesn't become collateral damage in a fractured relationship.
It is a fascinating evolution of family law, watching society try to codify the human-animal bond.
It really is.
But I want to leave you with a final, slightly provocative thought to ponder. Something that builds on this idea of pets as irreplaceable assets.
Okay.
As science and biotechnology advance at a rapid pace, commercial pet cloning is already a reality.
Yes, it is.
It is highly expensive, but the technology exists and people are using it.
It raises a profound question about the future of these custody disputes.
Exactly. What happens in 10 or 20 years if a high-stakes custody battle ends in an absolute legal stalemate? Could future petnups include clauses stipulating that in the event of an irreconcilable split over who gets the dog, the pet's DNA will be used to clone the animal.
That is wild.
Ensuring that both partners walk away with a genetically identical version of the dog they love.
It forces us to ask a deeply philosophical question. Do we love the genetic code of the animal, Or do we love the shared history and the unique personality shaped by our time together?
That's the real question.
The legal system might actually prefer the clone. Yep. It represents a perfect, mathematically clean division of property. But the human heart might not be so easily satisfied by a genetic replica.
A wild thing to think about next time you look at your dog resting on the living room rug. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden legal world of pet custody. Go give your pets a well-deserved belly rub for us. And remember, sometimes the things we love the most don't fit neatly into a spreadsheet. Until next time.